So just arrived at Frensham Little Pond, another site looked after by the National Trust. And the first thing that strikes me is that this pond is not so little. And I am here today joined by Matt Cusack, lead ranger for the Surrey Hills. Tell me, Matt, what are we going to see today?
So we're going to have a nice little walk around the little pond here. It's about 45 minutes long, probably about a couple of miles. And we're going to see some of the history, some of the natural history that we have here, the conservation work we're doing, and then we're going to find out about some of the filming work we've had here over the last few years.
Brilliant. Can we start with warming up with a cup of coffee before we embark on our walk?
Head in and get a bit of flapjack.
So we're in the bird hide at Frensham Little Pond.
Yes.
Such a beautiful setting here. I can't believe I've not been here before, looking out over the reeds, the trees with the autumn colour in the distance. Not quite as sunny as we thought it was going to be, but...
No, a little drop of rain, but it's still a lovely, you know, any time of the year. The colours are starting to turn and leaves are starting to fall. It won't be long before we have frost, you know, on the lake. It does freeze over.
I know, it must look so different with the changing seasons. And so nice to be able to just grab a quick coffee now by the cafe as our starting point on this walk. What's that bird straight ahead now?
I've got a feeling that's an osprey.
Wow.
Just, which is a real rare sight for us. So, that's 50 points on your spotter rating. So that's amazing. But yeah, they are here. So that'll be migrating. So they're here in the winter. Heading south. We get bitterns and osprey, so yeah, that's a good one.
Wow, that's our first that we've seen for the day.
Yes.
It was the wingspan that I noticed of it going over the water.
Yes.
And so where will that osprey have travelled from to come to Frensham Little Pond?
Come down from up north, so probably Scotland, and it'll travel on to the continent and on, so it'll have a warmer winter further south, and that'll come back in the spring. We'll see it migrating back in the springtime.
And could that potentially be the same osprey then?
It would be the same osprey, yeah. So this is it's probably having a bit of a bite to eat here, sort of motorway services, if you like.
On its epic journey.
Yeah, before it carries on its journey. Yeah, what a thing to see.
That's amazing. And it really blows my mind how birds know where they're travelling to and that they can return to the exact same location.
Yeah, so it'll be a family nest that they would have used probably years and years and years for decades, you know, from one generation to the next. And they'll have an inbuilt sort of almost GPS system.
So what other birds might we see at this time of year in the winter?
So we've got most of our sort of regular wildfowl, your coots, your regular ducks, your moorhens. You might see a heron out there. Regular waterfowl. We've got a couple of swans that are here. We only ever normally have two swans here at any one time. We never have more than one pair, which is slightly odd for a lake of this size.
Considering this is Frensham Little Pond,
yes.
And I've not been here before,
yes.
It's making me wonder what Frensham Great Pond looks like.
Because
we can bet, you can see to the other side, but, I mean, how far is that?
It's about 15 hectares in size, so it's... It's about 25, 30 acres. So, huge. And apparently I'm told a pond is to do with depth. So even though we think of this as a lake, you can actually wade from one side of the pond to the other. It gets a little bit sketchy in the middle because it was drained during the war. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But, it's the depth that defines it as a pond as opposed to a lake.
Oh,
it's
right.
not the surface area.
Yeah, well, this could look like, it does look like a lake.
Yes,
But it's a pond because it's shallow.
Because it's very shallow, yes.
Oh, that's interesting. It's so beautiful.
We might see the big bird again in a minute. It's
He's in that tree, wasn't he?
He's over there, yeah.
Do you think that's what he's doing then?
Oh, yeah, he'll be fishing.
Is this his food stop?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this is, as I say, the motorway services before he embarks on his long journey onto the continent.
So what fish would there be in here for the osprey to...
Yeah, I mean, these are what they would call coarse fishing. So we have Farnham Angling Society are here. They pay to fish. And obviously the osprey can come in and he can fish, and other birds as well do fishing. So we'd have perch and tench. There's a lot of carp out here. It's a carp lake. And actually stood where we are now is a perfect time to explain that this lake here is actually a man-made feature.
But is it a pond or a lake? That's slip of the tongue.
That's right. This lake, this pond. So it was the bishops of Winchester. They wanted fish for the, you know, when they had the all the guests that they were dining. They wanted some lovely big fish. And back in the day, they used to love carp. So, this would have been a carp fishery. So they had bondsmen, or medieval men, that were building this lake here. So this wall that we're standing on now and a bit further down is the medieval dam. So they built this to flood this area here, in a typical dam fashion. And then, they used to fish the lakes just for
that's stock. Incredible. So what would have been here before they
so
built the dam?
So it would have been
dam?
A shallow, bit of a shallow spot. And the odd thing is that because we're on heathland, we're sandy, this is quite a free-draining soil. But there's a lot of iron pan, and I'll try and point some out on the wall. It's the very dark brown stone that we see as we go along. So there's an iron pan underneath. So that sand is very permeable. But when it gets down to the iron pan, that's actually a sheet of impermeable rock. So it just sits there. So the water sits here. Even this last summer, it's been very dry, probably one of the driest summers we've had on record. Yet we've always maintained good water height here. It's really useful. Classified as a reservoir. So under EA guidelines, we have to maintain it and look after it, because there is a potential if the dam burst, it could have a knock-on effect to our residents further downstream. So, we look after it. And just on the historic front, we've got the Great Pond, which I'll talk about a bit more as we walk further round. But these two ponds were very... they used to reflect the moon. So we're going back to World War II now. When the Luftwaffe came over, they would reflect the moon. So they'd see they'd navigate to the Great Pond, navigate to the Little Pond, and then almost a direct line of sight further on is Aldershot, which is the home of the British military, and then they would drop their bombs. So these ponds were drained, or certainly this one was drained in the Second World War to stop that navigational aid. They didn't have things like GPS and all that. It was done literally on landmarks, or so they'd fly out on a moonlit night, see the pond reflecting, and they'd be able to plot it on a map and knew, I don't know, about another 8 or 10 miles further on, they would drop all their bombs, and they knew they'd pretty much hit all the shots. So there's a little tiny little dwarf wall behind us, and that's where the army blew it up, I'm told, with hand grenades and lots of explosives, drained all the water downstream, and then it was rebuilt in the 1950s, and this is when the pond was re-flooded.
Reinstated?
Yes.
Post-World War II?
Yes.
That's not the osprey, is it?
No.
No, not, was
not
that?
Not big enough. Not big enough.
Desperate to see it again. So what are we looking at now, Matt? It's this beautiful sort of arch doorway.
Yeah, so this is the actual medieval dam. You can still see, I mean, this is remnants of 20th century ironwork here, where they would have had a sluice gate on here. You can see there's the archway lower down, which has now been bricked up, sort of probably 80, 100 years ago. So we try and look after it. It is a scheduled ancient monument. A lot of this spillway and flume was put in and bolstered up, because the soil behind it was eroding just with the sheer footfall of people. So we had this done about 15 or 20 years ago, and I built this bridge by hand, the one that we're stood on now.
You built this bridge?
Yeah.
Wow. So, and look, it's still going strong. You've done a good job, Matt.
Not too bad.
Good job.
Yeah, it's
a
quite
lovely
enjoyable,
wooden...
enjoyable building that.
Is that the osprey over there?
The osprey? Yes. We're probably safe. You saw it, did you?
Yeah. So So we've just walked on from the dam, and now on our right we've got sand. Almost the pond is sort of, the water is lapping at the edge of, it looks like a beach, it doesn't is. It?
Yeah. Yeah, and this recedes quite a way out during the summer months. So this is quite a nice beach for people to enjoy. Yeah, and this wall is relatively new that we're looking at here. It's obviously been tried to mimic the original medieval wall. But, yeah, this would have been one of the ones that was put back in after the war.
So when you say the water recedes in the summer, obviously this isn't tidal, so it's an inland beach, but yeah. Is that just evaporation?
Evaporation, yeah. That's so, and, you know, what comes in must go out, as it were, and when the feeder stream stops feeding it, yeah, it just evaporates. And there will be a bit of leakage downwards. And the dam, being so old, is also a little bit leaky. So over time, yeah. And we've got now probably this 5 or 6 metres out of usable beach, and that's the same all the way around. It rises. I mean, I don't know if you can see on the reeds, normally there's a tide line. So if we'd come here about a month ago, and after the dry summer, that tide line was about a foot lower, so that the water level drops about a foot. It doesn't drop too much, but this is very, very shallow here. The water recedes quite drastically.
So what might this look like in the summer? Because at the moment we've got maybe a metre of sand.
Yeah. So that metre, in actual fact, in another month or so, you won't be able to see any sand here. That water will still got probably another 4 or 5 inches to raise up. But in the summer, it'll go back about 5 or 6 metres. And you've got quite a nice stretch of beach there to sit and enjoy and have picnics. Children digging sandcastles. It's lovely.
You know, because it's quite a freezing November day. Yeah. It's quite difficult to imagine.
Yes, in the summer.
This time next summer, there'll be people picnicking and sunbathing.
Yeah, and I think that's what, as I said before, it's what makes it part of that's what makes the property, the fact that it's, you can get four seasons from your property, the winter when it freezes, the summer when it's, like Benidorm, as they say, and this time of year when the autumn colour's lovely.
Yeah, no, it's really beautiful. Right, let's keep warm and keep going, shall we? Matt, that dog walker that I just met, I've not come across a Tibetan terrier before.
Yeah, it's lovely looking.
Very lovely dog.
Yes.
And I've noticed as we've been walking around already, so many dog walkers have walked past us. It's obviously a popular spot.
Yeah, very popular. It's sort of dry all year round. We had a lot of rain last week, and it's the paths are lovely and dry now, and they're just regular shoes. It's quite level, so it's nice for a walk. But a lot of people like to bring their dog here for a walk. And in certain times of the year, it's not a problem. We let the dogs run off the lead, but normally between March and September, we ask people to sort of have their dogs quite close by them.
And that's also, like any other beach, isn't
it? Like
I always
other...
see that on beaches, that it's like, summer months, dogs not allowed. So
yes, and I think certainly for an inland waterway, a lake is, or a pond.
It's a pond. Says it on the signs you've made, Matt.
Dogs in the water. I mean, a lot of people don't realise that actually the spot-ons that you get on the dogs is an insecticide. It's there to stop ticks and fleas and things, and when the dog goes in the water, some of that insecticide comes off in the water, and that can have quite a negative effect on the aquatic wildlife that lives in there, all the bugs and beasties that live in there. So what we ask is, I think vets can supply it now, is that you give your dog a tablet form of the insecticide that it needs for the ticks and the fleas, rather than the spot-on treatment. So that's much better for the environment. Yeah.
So, because I thought that dogs weren't allowed on beaches, and here, because it might disturb the wildlife and, the bird life as well as the sort of aquatic, but it's actually what
it's the insecticide that's on their coat. You put a little pipette on the back of the neck, and that's designed to cover the entire coat. So when the dog goes in the water, and it's only micro doses, but you scale that up by 100 dogs going in the water, all of a sudden it has a cumulative effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just keeping my eye out to see if we might see that osprey again, especially as all the years I've worked here, this is the one and only day that I've seen it here. So it's, yeah, it'd be amazing if we see that again.
So how many years have you worked here, Matt?
For the National Trust at Hindhead, I've been 31 years now.
So in 31 years, yes. Today is the first day that you've seen an osprey here.
Yes, yeah, and that just shows you how rare they are. Yeah, quite a special day.
That's absolutely incredible. So we've literally just finished our coffee from the cafe. We'd sat in the bird hide, and then I just saw this huge wingspan of this, you know, bird flying low to the pond. And that's so that's the first time in 31 years ever. That's amazing. There'll
probably be a few twitches around later.
Yeah, well, if... and look, Matt, the two swans that you mentioned on the other side of the water.
Yes. Yeah, they're all
resident. They really stand out, don't they?
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Because it's a bit of an overcast, wintry day. Yes. They're white coats.
You'll have a wander down to the... So these gates are here for the... this is what we call an angling swim. So this is as part of the Farnham Angling Society's lease. They have these... swims, so fishermen and women can set up their rod and their little umbrellas, tents, and stay here for days to fish.
So is that why it's number five?
Yeah.
So you would book a spot.
That's right.
At the Angling Society.
Yeah, and it helps us as well with, you know, if there's a tree that's come down or something submerged in the water, that'll tell us what the swim number is.
Keep looking out now over the water. Like, where's that
anything
osprey?
Anything white and large, yeah.
Another bird hide. You've got the viewing windows to look through, and a very helpful bird spotting
board. So being a child of the 70s, I grew up with I Spy books, which I think you can still buy nowadays, and you go along and you spot a grey wagtail and you can get 20 points, or you can spot an osprey like we have done today.
Oh, so you weren't joking when you said we got 50 points. Oh, so we didn't look at the board properly. But yes, so each of the birds, there's an image and a caption about them and then the spotter rating. And so the only other bird that we would get 50 spotter points for is the bittern.
Yes, yes, that's right.
So can we see one of those today? So what do you think?
We're lucky enough to see one of the big two, as it were. So, really good.
And so when would you see a bittern? At this time of year, or?
Yeah, so, I mean, October to March. So, I mean, any time that they would be coming again, they're on their migratory path. So they would drop in. That's quite a, that's, I'd say 50 points, same as osprey, but that would be probably a 75 pointer, I would say.
Even rarer.
Points, even rarer.
Well, if you've only seen an osprey for the first time in 31
I've never
years,
seen a bittern.
Maybe we might not see a
bittern. And if we look through here, we can see the tern rafts out in the water.
Can you see them?
I can't see them. They are literally just below us. Yeah,
but, hidden by the reeds.
But if anyone came and visited in the summer or the spring, they'd be able to see them in that open water just beyond the screen here, because we've brought them in. They're covered in shingle, and the terns like to push the shingle up. Normally they're on a beach, on an island somewhere. We mentioned dogs. There's a lot of dogs here, so they get disturbed. So what we've done is we have these little floating beaches, if you like, little shingle beaches. They're on a raft. They float out in the water. The terns are completely happy. They don't get predated by foxes or any of those things, or disturbed by dogs and people. And they sort of make these little shallows in the shingle, loose sort of builders type shingle, lay their eggs. And we put a little wooden box, or three or four little wooden boxes, on top of these tern rafts, so they climb in, make this little nest, so they don't get scorched in the sun, and the tern chicks hatch. And then they carry on. So yeah,
but so the raft beaches have the benefit of being able to be, you know, free from predators.
Protected, yes.
But
yes,
they need to stay on them.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And there's a
like a Perspex shield around to try and keep them on top of the floating island, as it were. It also stops something like a mink getting onto the raft and eating the chicks and the eggs when they're on there.
Where did you get the idea from? So I've never heard of a tern raft before. I quite like the idea of a human floating beach.
Yeah,
as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. it's a thing. You know, terns have always used them. As I say, they're like beaches, but we had one here for a long time, but it was made of wood. Often geese lay their eggs on there as well, and whatever goes in one end of a goose comes out the other end of the goose, so it gets quite messy on there. That's why that we need to refresh the shingle this year. So,
make them turn friendly again.
Yes, exactly.
So how many rafts?
There's two.
Two?
Yeah, two rafts. They're about, I don't know, 8 foot by 4 foot, 5 foot perhaps.
So they're big?
Yeah, and we can't get there by boat, it's too shallow, so we have to wade out there.
Oh really, put your big waders on?
Yeah. It's quite funny actually, because I mentioned at the beginning that during the war they drained the lake down. And they use this area here. There's some lovely images on the Imperial War Museum website of Churchill and Charles de Gaulle and others next to some tanks that were doing some training in Frensham. And they actually drove the tanks through the mud here on the pond when it was drained. And they left quite deep tank tracks. So when Tim and I, my ranger colleague, go out there and do the checks on the tern raft and try and help the chicks, and you're almost up to the top of your waders, and all of a sudden you find on the floor you come across a tank track. It takes your breath away when you sort of put your foot into the tank track, and it then almost the water goes over the top of your waders.
Because it's such a drop. We're just going round to the right now. We walked all down the one side of the pond.
We walked down one side. We're almost at the complete opposite side to where the cafe is now. So we're about halfway round.
I mean, obviously, we've been sort of stopping and chatting along the way, but how long would it take someone visiting to do this circuit round Frensham?
Yeah, I think if you're strolling, and don't take in too many of the lovely views, about 40 minutes, 45 minutes, three quarters of an hour. So
perfect walk. So what sort of distance would that be? Maybe 2-3 miles?
Yeah, a couple of miles around around mile and a half to a couple of miles. This we're talking about tanks and the war. This path up here always makes me chuckle, because they remember the public flagged that there was a piece of metal just in the ground just about here somewhere, and it looked like a bit of a cast iron drain pipe, and 1 million feet, 2 million feet must have walked over this all the years since the war, and it turned out to be an unexploded tank shell. Huge great thing, probably about 18 inches long and about 5 or 6 inches to 150 millimetres in diameter, polished, where all these feet have walked over it. And we called the bomb disposal unit out. And
polished from all the feet?
All the feet, yeah,
on.
Exactly. And then the bomb disposal guy said, yeah, it's live.
And so there's
about
exploded?
No, there's about 2 kilos of explosives in it. And they had to take it away very carefully, in a van with about 2 or 3 police cars in front, a police escort, and then I took it away somewhere and blew it up. So, all those times that someone could have
been
a goner.
Yeah,
exactly. Yes. So,
it still surprises me that all these years on that people are still finding remnants, and rather worryingly, unexploded.
Yes. Could be walking over them now as we speak.
Oh, yes. Good. Bye. It's really nice knowing
you.
So on this path, people had walked over
yes, polished. It was a polished piece of metal. As I say, it looked like a piece of drain pipe, cast iron drain pipe. But no, it was one of the shells that they'd obviously fired and not gone off. I don't think there was a detonator in them. That's why they just fired a shell with no detonator in, but 2 kilos of explosives.
Goodness. So how long ago was it that that was found?
2011, because we had a big fire here in 2010. It was just after that.
What was the fire in 2010?
It was...
What caused it?
Unfortunately, it was a campfire. We found some like stones in a circle with some baked potatoes in it, and it was in the middle of July. I think it was just after... August, perhaps it was August. It was just after GCSE results. I think people had a bit of a party, and unfortunately, a lot of the common went up.
What, it was that big a fire?
No, yeah, huge. Yeah, I'll show you more when we get out the other side. But this boardwalk that we're walking over here now, this is...
It's a really long boardwalk, isn't it?
This was put in... Well, it's been here for forever, but we replaced it probably about 10 or 15 years ago. Needs a bit of work on it now, but we're in an area of Aldercar, which is, these trees are all, apart from that one there, which is a birch, but all these rough shaped barked trees are alder. They love wetland, they love their feet in water. And you can see where one is being coppiced. So this one here, this straight one, is an original tree, and then where they've been cut in the past, multiple stems have come away from the base, and it was primarily used for making gunpowder alder charcoal. So that was a constituent part of making gunpowder back in the day. As I say, it loves its feet in water, and we still use it nowadays for doing so. Something like this bridge here, this boardwalk, where the timbers are in the water all the time, we actually use the alder timber under here to keep it from rotting. It's a very well preserved timber when it's got its feet wet.
So it's they're really tall as well, aren't they? You have to really sort of crane your neck to look up, and at this time of year there's not much of a tree canopy, is there?
No.
It's just a few leaves at the top and sort of wispy. And are they just wispy branches because they've been...
Yeah, they had these funny little... can't really see them, but there's like a funny bunch of seeds. They're seeds on the end of the actual sort of leaf, twigs, as it were. But this is lovely. When you're walking around in the summer, and when do we have it? It's about 40 degrees, I think it was at 2022. So you're out in the heath, it's baking, and you walk through here, and this is wet. You've got the lovely dapple shade of the alder as you're walking through here. It's a nice respite as you're going through the hot heath. It's like an anomaly. And you've got the feeder stream, which comes in behind us. That is the stream that feeds the great pond.
Yeah. It's been lovely variety already on this walk, but... You know, we've been by the banks of the beach, and now we've got these tall grasses, and we're within the woodland. It's
it's a nice contrast.
Very peaceful here, isn't it?
Yeah,
just starting to rain again.
Yeah.
Keep going. Is alder a native tree?
It is. Yes. Yeah, they've been using it for centuries.
Because there's a big move, isn't there, as I understand it, towards planting more traditional
more natives,
native trees.
That's right. Yep. Thanks.
Good morning.
Yeah, so this is the stream here, one of the streams that feeds it.
It's quite wide, isn't it? What would you say, 4 metres at this wide spot?
Yeah, and we've got another one. So these two sort of converge just through here. Yeah. And we're doing we will be doing some work in the alder car, as it's known, for the lesser spotted woodpecker. I'm told they quite like that sort of alder coppice. So we're going to go in there and try and... I think they like dead alder stems, so we're going to go in there and ring bark one or two. Not near the path, because it would be an issue from... but we're going to
wade in there, and
if we've got a nice healthy stool of, I don't know, 6 or 7 stems, we might ring bark one or two, just to give a bit of variety in there and help the lesser spotted woodpeckers.
So you get woodpeckers here as well?
Yeah, both, all three types. So
three types of woodpeckers.
Yeah, the green,
here.
The greater, and the hopefully the lesser if we do our management correctly.
So with all the different sites that you look after, Matt, is this, you know, how often do you find yourself in Frensham?
Oh, I try and get down here as often as I can. I mean, it's a small site in comparison. It's about, I think it's 35 hectares. But the site itself is a much, much larger, and that's because the National Trust ownership here, we own the land where the little pond is, and we also own the land where the Great Pond is. But the Great Pond is managed by Waverley Borough Council, so they're our neighbours, if you like, but they're also our partners, and they've got it on a 100-year lease from the National Trust. I think that comes up for renewal in 2070 something, so we've got another good few years, another 50 years to go. But we work really closely with Darren and his team over there, because it's, you know, to the member of the public, when they walk from one side of the site to another, they wouldn't know they were moving from a Waverley managed piece of ground to a National Trust managed piece of ground. So yeah, we manage it together in close partnership.
And I suppose share learnings as well.
Yeah.
Things you've tried,
yes,
that have helped wildlife.
Yeah. And if they do something, I mean, they had a public spaces protection order a couple of years ago where they were trying to stop people from smoking on the common. And then that sort of passed all of those people that wanted to have a cigarette on the common over towards us. So,
oh no, did they just move?
They just went from one side to the other. So yeah, it's all about joined up working.
Yeah.
And try and stop all those sorts of things.
So obviously today we're doing this lovely circular walk around Frensham Little Pond, but yeah, can you walk between the two then?
Yeah, so you can walk, there's a lovely route, so pretty much where we are now at the top end of the pond, away from the cafe opposite end, you could carry on up. We're going to break out in a minute onto the heathland, and you could walk up onto that ridge we can see in the distance, which is known as the King's Ridge. I don't know why, presumably the King rode up there at some point.
He must have done, yeah, otherwise.
Yes, the other side of that ridge is where the Great Pond is. So
so that's why we can't see it, because
we can't
of the
see
ridge
it from here. Yeah.
But if you fancy climbing, you can,
yeah,
go up and over.
So as I say, the circular route around the pond is about 3/4 of an hour. But if you wanted to take in the Great Pond as well, you could be here all day and have a nice wander around.
Yeah. How long would it take you to walk from where we are now, do you think?
From here to the Great Pond, probably about the same again. So another 3/4 of an hour, I would have thought. So.
Yeah. Now the landscape's completely changed now. We've gone from being on that boardwalk surrounded by the really tall alder and the wetland,
yes,
to now everything being very low-lying, and
yes,
the bushes either side of the much narrower path look like gorse.
Yes, gorse, yeah, the spiny ones are the gorse, and got some lovely heather. It's just, obviously it was flowering the tail end of the summer, so this is ling, Coluna vulgaris, our most common type of heather. That's the one that you can see most of around here. Yeah, and the heathland extends. As I say, there was a big fire in 2010, so...
On this heath.
On this heath here. So where we're stood now was the edge of it, and it took out the entire, all the sort of foreground in front of us. So everything you can see that's heathery,
yeah,
around us now, up to that ridge, and then about the same size the other side of the ridge. It took it out, so yeah.
What, the fire
covered
the whole
of that, yeah.
I mean, we're looking at a huge expanse.
Hundreds of acres, yeah, yeah.
Opposite,
yeah,
of such a dry, hot day.
Yeah, it was
summer's day.
Windy, yeah. As soon as I had the phone call, I thought, oh my goodness. And I live not too far from Liphook, down in Hampshire. And as I came up the road, I got to Liphook, and I could see this big stack of smoke. And we must be, a 25-minute drive from Liphook, so. That's how big the fire was. I could see it in the distance, and it put the hairs on the back of my neck up now just thinking about it.
Does it?
The whole lot was just in flames. And the police, and it was a very busy, sunny summer's day. I reckon there was about 5,000 people on the beaches.
Oh, so you're worried about the safety
about the people.
Of people.
There was a police helicopter there with a loud hailer telling people to evacuate. Yeah.
Gosh, how frightening.
Yeah, and luckily we lost no properties. There's a lot of, you know, lovely houses that skirt the property, so no houses were burnt. But yeah, they didn't think they were going to contain it to start with. Yeah, took all this hillside. Everywhere you can see here that
was just burnt.
This heather was burnt, yeah. We've left the odd dead...
And was it heather there before?
It was heather. It was quite scrubby. So, you know, we've got these pine trees that have popped up, some birch trees that popped up. So, you know, on Heatham, we don't like too many of those because it just turns into woodland ultimately. So it was getting to that stage, and then the fire came through and almost reset it. There's just the devastating nature of it all being all at once, that's the trouble. So there's a lot of casualties.
Well, and that sounded like it was getting out of control.
Yeah.
I suppose as a result, you know, the message is you can't have barbecues here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beach, so people think, well, let's go to the beach and take a barbecue. But actually, it's our biggest fear, is that all the lovely work that we've been putting in, all these wonderful animals that we've, you know, see here, living here, that could be gone in an instant with a careless barbecue in a heather bush.
And that's a scary thing, isn't it? One stray spark on a hot day and it could cause years of devastation.
Yeah, and people have their barbecue, they tend it, and then they decide to, you know, dispose of it in a bush somewhere. It smoulders overnight and it doesn't take much before that ignites, and then...
Oh, right, so to them it looks like it's out.
Or they've tipped the coals out somewhere and put the tin foil, you know, taking the tin foil home with them. But it's the disposable barbecues that are the real problem.
Is that one of the biggest sort of disasters that's happened in your time?
Yeah, fire is,
yes.
Yeah, fire's not good.
So we've come through that sort of narrow path through all the heathland, and now the path's opening up and it's much wider.
So the path split here. We're going to take the right-hand path and sort of hug the lake as we go around. The pond. but this other route that goes on through here is a byway open to all traffic. So
it does look like a road,
And that, hence the reason for the stump posts, the dragon's teeth as we call them, to just try and keep the vehicles on the road, in inverted commas, rather than coming down here.
I mean, the surface beneath our feet is so lovely to walk on because it feels quite spongy almost, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's that sort of soft sand.
Yeah.
It gets quite deep in the summer. It's almost hard to walk on. You think that would be odd, but it gives you a bit of a workout when you're walking on it. But yeah, drop of rain and a few thousand feet over the top, it makes it lovely and flat.
Yeah, it feels very soft underfoot. I mean, it's not yellow like sand, it's quite sort of
grey colour. It's a green sand, as it's known.
Lots of leaves underfoot as well, given that it's
that time of year,
end of autumn.
So I don't know if you can see on this, we've got a bit of a, I always think it feels a bit like a moat, so there's water in it. And you've got this bank to the side where we put dead hedging, and that's to stop animals getting in there, foxes and dogs and things. So we call that the bird sanctuary. So that's where birds can live, a little bit like our tern rafts. You know, it's an island, so the dogs have got to go through the water, try and get up the bank and through all that brash stuff, all that dead hedging material there, to get onto the island. Well, that's a lot of faff for a dog or a fox to do. So the birds can nest happily on the inside of that island there.
Yeah, it looks very well-established dead hedge, doesn't it? So it's got lots of...
Yeah, all sorts woven in there.
Yeah.
And we had the stakes have been in there for a few years. We try and pair them up. And then we just, whenever we cut bits of willow, I mean, there's a willow there and stuff, we would just stuff it in between.
Yeah, the dead hedge looks beautiful. Just lots of sort of twigs and fine branches woven within each other, about a metre high.
Yep, most of that is willow, and actually I think I can see one or two, they've got upward growth.
So yeah.
I think where they've been sort of stuck in at the angle and they've been laid, they're actually growing now. Willow's quite
resilient.
Yeah, it's quite keen to grow once it's been cut, so...
That's amazing.
Much to some people's annoyance, but... So it is a hedge, but as we call it, a dead hedge, so it's cut off at the base.
Yeah, wood.
It's just wood, it's all bits and bobs we've got lying around. We do that tail end of the summer, So when we can get in here, we're not going to disturb the birds nesting. When there isn't water in the moat, if you like, the creek.
Yeah.
So we can get in there and do it with volunteers. We've done some really effective stuff further around with the fishermen, actually. They lend a hand. Good
team nice. Effort.
Yeah.
So the volunteers, how many do you have coming to help in the summer, or is it all year round that people volunteer?
All year round. We have a Thursday group. You can see here on the left, there's been a fire, so we've had the volunteers going through the... This is a bonfire fire, not a heath fire. But
was that an intended fire?
Intended fire. Yeah. So the volunteers have been out here cutting birch and pine. And then we have a small fire on site. And they come out, so they're working all year round. We have to vary the jobs depending on the season.
Yeah.
And we have anywhere from about 8 to about 15 or so every week. A lot of them have been coming out here for... 10, 15 years or so.
So they obviously enjoy it.
Yes. Yeah, you can see a bit more of where we've done some work with the fishermen.
More dog walkers.
Yeah.
Oh, getting the dogs out of the water. There's a little gap in that dead hedge.
Yeah, something's gone through. We might have to fill that one in.
Yeah.
So we're just wandering back along here now, which is coming back to... the beaches. It feels a bit more open here.
Yeah, we're getting a bit closer to the water's edge.
Yeah, getting closer to the water. Not far now from the cafe. And this is the spot here where we've had quite a lot of filming activity over the years. So, as I mentioned, we're number 3 in the country out of all the National Trust properties.
Which is incredible. Yeah, because filming goes on, all over.
That's right.
It?
So we normally have one or two... big things a year. There's been a...
What have you had recently?
What have we had? The Witcher was back here, so that was filmed on King's Ridge and down here. That was early part of the summer. Yeah.
So the cafe must have been very popular that week.
Yeah, they do bring their own on-site catering, but a lot of people want to come and see the filming. It's quite, to some people, it's a bit of an annoyance, it's ruined their lovely walk around the pond. But to others, people are thinking, actually, it's quite nice to come and see. So this area where we are here now, this was... quite big for Snow White and the Huntsman.
So that was filmed here as well.
Yeah. So we had Huntsman and Snow White and the Huntsman. So this was where we are now, is where the Huntsman's house was, his little cottage.
They built a little cottage here?
Yeah, all out of polystyrene here, builder's foam, and it looked brilliant. And then further down, we had the village. So if anyone's seen the film Snow White and the Huntsman, there's a village on a lake that will get set on fire. That was here. So
did they actually set it on fire?
Yeah, gas. They turn it up and turn it down and go for a reset, and then they turn it up and down again. So yeah, they did it several times. We had Sandman here last year, so Stephen Fry was on this beach just here. And then we had Angelina Jolie in the water just at this spot here.
Was this filmed in the summer?
This was in the summer. This was all dressed out with lots of different plants that was meant to make it look like the Amazon. It was a film called Eternals, and she came out of the water in a white dress. It was quite funny because they'd packed everything up, and then Tim and I found a pair of waders on the side of the beach here, I said, oh my goodness, it's Angelina Jolie's waders.
We've
got Angelina Jolie's waders. Anyway, looked at the size, and they were size 11, and she's probably about your height. She's not very tall. So I thought, she's never got size 11 feet. Then I realised there was also a cameraman and a sound man in the water with her. So we didn't have Angelina Jolie's waders. We got one of the sound man's waders.
The disappointment. Yes. You're like, oh my goodness, how could she have size 11 feet?
Yes. So, it was quite funny.
Yeah.
But again, you can see the water isn't quite up to the edge here, so this beach goes out probably another 10 metres. So this is nothing but windbreaks and picnic rugs and, toddlers dabbling in the edge of the water in the summer.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest expanse of sand that we've seen in the circular walk.
Yes, yeah. So this is what we call the long beach for that reason. And then we've got the main beach, which is nearly at the cafe when we get back.
Yeah, it's a really beautiful spot. I've loved the variety on this circular walk. We've had a bit of everything, haven't we?
Yeah.
And
yeah, there's a few ripples today, but yeah, sometimes it's like a mill pond and you can see the lovely reflections, and yeah, it's quite calming.
Yeah.
When you're walking around.
And all the money from that filming presumably goes back to helping the conservation work that you do here.
Yeah, it comes back into the Surrey Hills. So, yeah, it comes back into the property. So that's why, that's why we do it. Obviously, we're a charity. We need money to operate, and it goes into our reserves so we can then pay for things that we may not have been able to afford.
Yeah.
Again, that could be resurfacing of paths or doing the dead hedging, you know, some of those stakes needed money to be done, fixing potholes in the car park, all those things that benefit the people that visit here. So they then, you know, when they see the filming, it's actually not too much of an issue because they know the money's coming back to the site.
Yeah, yeah. And it helps you and your teams do all the conservation work that ongoing.
Yeah, some of the nice projects and some of the, you know, I know, fixing electrics and, you know, toilets and such. But yeah, all that money goes back to the trust to help. There was a Worldwide Fund for Nature advert. It was you could probably Google it on YouTube, but it was a GP in her doctor's surgery, and she said, "I'm going to prescribe you
nature.
A dose
oh,
of nature."
I think I did
and
see
then,
that.
And then
yeah.
As it pans back, the doctor's surgery was just up here in these pine trees. So as it pans back, then you get to see the lake.
I did see that. Oh.
Yeah, so that's quite cool. So I can see the cafe in sight.
Oh, thank goodness. Not that I want this walk to finish, but I'm really looking forward to warming up my hands with a
nice
cup of coffee.
Yeah, hot chocolate with all this.
Oh, actually, yes, I did see someone
trimmings.
Earlier
yeah,
with
yeah.
a hot chocolate with, it looked like marshmallows on top. Oh, look, there's a heron.
I can't see. Oh, yeah.
Oh, just at the water's edge. They look very majestic, herons, don't they? I love the way that they just stand still for ages. I often think, is it a statue?
Is it a plastic one?
Is it a real one? So it's not moved for the last 5 minutes.
Yes. It's going to go any minute.
Saying hello.
So here
what
we are.
What are all these trees on the left?
So these are all Scots pine.
They're so tall and thin, aren't they?
Yeah, and these would be probably quite old, even though they're not, you know, in girth-wise, they're not huge, but I'd imagine these are probably getting on for 100 years old. And there's a lovely belt through here. We leave this as a bit of a buffer between the car park and the beach, so people walk through the pine trees. It's a lovely feeling walking through the pine. Again, as I say, on a nice hot sunny summer's day, it gives a bit of contrast, a bit of shade, and also means that if we take these trees out, that the heathen would snap hard up to the car park. So we want to try and give a bit of a buffer between the car park, where a lot of the disturbance goes on, and the actual pure heath itself out here.
Yeah, they look beautiful, and the fact that between each of the Scots pine, it's just sort of grassy flat surface is that through land management that it, or was it just
it's quite acidic, so the pine needles that have rained down are quite acidic. There's a lot of footfall through here because the daylight can't really get to the floor. The forest floor, there's not much really grows down here, and also, if I'm completely honest, this is really good for the filming. They love it when they
Look really cool.
So So, we try and keep it as clear and as open as possible so that the filming happens here in this sort of moderately disturbed area rather than being on a bit of heathland out there, which is a bit more sensitive.
Yeah. No, it looks great. And now the sun's started to come out, a bit of light coming through the top.
Yeah, when the thing that they call atmosphere, so it's normally a smoke, a mineral oil-based smoke that goes through there, so it looks a bit like mist and fog. They've always got that on these productions. It looks lovely through there, especially with a bit of lighting. Well, we're nearly back where we started.
Yeah, back at the cafe.
Yeah.
That was a really lovely walk.
Good.
I can't believe I've not been here before. I'll be back now.
Yes, it's a lot of the media like to promote it as Surrey's secret beach. And the trouble is, it's not so secret now that it's everyone knows about it. But we don't mind that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Walk with a Ranger. To find out more about our places, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/Surrey Hills. We'll be back soon with a new episode, but for now from me, Jo Dyson, goodbye. This podcast has been funded by the Surrey Hills Access Fund.